Have you ever noticed how we spend billions treating diseases, but pennies preventing them? How we pour resources into fixing crises, yet ignore the patterns that create them? Consider this. America spends $3.5 trillion on healthcare, yet for every dollar treating illness, we invest just $1 in keeping people healthy. Compare that to Norway's approach, which flips the ratio and ranks 5th globally in infant mortality, while the U.S. languishes at 34th. We're not failing for lack of effort. We're failing because we're rescuing drowning children from a river instead of walking upstream to stop whoever keeps throwing them in. This downstream obsession isn't inevitable. It's a choice we've normalized. When Dr. Marcus Elliott joined the New England Patriots in 1999, the team accepted player injuries as freak occurrences, part of the game's nature. Elliott saw something different, predictable outcomes of poor training. By implementing individualized programs based on detailed assessments, he slashed hamstring injuries from 22 to just 3. His philosophy? Don't wait for bad things to happen. Look for the signal that risk exists, then act. That's upstream thinking, and it transforms everything. Problem blindness prevents us from seeing issues we could prevent because we're too busy reacting. In one study, 20 of 24 radiologists examining CT scans missed a gorilla image inserted into the slides. When attention narrows, we become blind to what's directly before us. Habituation renders persistent problems invisible through familiarity, like sexual harassment in 1960s workplaces, normalized and thus unrecognized. Breaking through requires 3 steps: recognizing we've normalized the abnormal, finding community with others sharing this realization, and voluntarily assuming responsibility. Brazilian activist Debra Delage discovered Brazil's shocking 84% C-section rate in private hospitals. Joining natural childbirth advocates, their work increased vaginal births from 20% to 37.5% across 35 hospitals. Ray Anderson, founder of Interface Carpet Company, read The Ecology of Commerce at 60 and wept, realizing his company burned fossil fuel to make products from fossil fuel. His awakening led Interface to pursue Mission Zero. Between 1995-1996, revenue jumped from $800 million to $1 billion without consuming additional raw materials. Dr. Bob Sanders championed Tennessee's 1978 Child Passenger Protection Act, saving over 11,000 children's lives nationwide. These leaders proved that voluntarily claiming ownership of problems, even ones you helped create, can lead to transformation. Scarcity creates tunnel vision. People focus on immediate crises while neglecting prevention. Researcher Anita Tucker watched nurses constantly solving problems: missing equipment, towel shortages, malfunctioning devices. They became expert firefighters in a system that never improved because they lacked time to address root causes. Escaping requires slack, dedicated time for upstream thinking, like hospital safety huddles or teams that identify at-risk students before they fail. Our brains naturally prioritize immediate threats over future ones, making upstream thinking an evolutionary add-on utility still in beta testing. The Montreal Protocol succeeded through vivid framing, the ozone hole, addressing opponents' concerns and creating international cooperation, preventing catastrophic environmental changes. In 1997, 42% of Icelandic teens reported recent drunkenness. Drug-free Iceland united researchers, policymakers, schools, parents, and community groups around a revolutionary idea. Instead of telling teens to say no, change the culture surrounding them. They enforced curfews, provided sports club memberships, and created natural highs. By 2018, those who had been drunk dropped from 17 to just 3 in a typical class of 40. After Dorothy Junta Cotter was murdered despite following safety protocols, Kelly Dunn organized the Domestic Violence High Risk Team in 2005, uniting 13 to 15 people from disconnected roles to review high-risk cases. In 14 years since, 0 women were killed in their service area, compared to 8 in the prior decade. The pattern? Surround problems with the right people, provide early warning, and align efforts toward prevention. Anthony Eitan, educated at Johns Hopkins Medical School, was shocked by East Baltimore's blighted neighborhoods in 1985. As director of Alameda County Public Health Department, he discovered life expectancy gaps of 16 years between zip codes just 22 miles apart. Cleveland showed a 23-year gap within 4 miles, like having Sweden and Afghanistan in the same city. These neighborhoods were incubators of chronic stress, where residents constantly struggled with housing, education, crime, and employment, physically altering their health. Systems determine probabilities. Well-designed systems favor success. Flawed ones require defying overwhelming odds. Water fluoridation saves $20 in dental costs per dollar spent. Auto safety improvements reduced fatalities from 5 deaths per 100 million miles in 1967 to about 1 today. Organizations should push for system change, not just help people survive broken systems, but fix them. In 2008, the University of Chicago Crime Lab discovered most homicides weren't strategic gang hits, but impulsive reactions to trivial disputes. Partnering with Youth Guidance's Becoming a Man program, which taught young men to distinguish destructive, savage anger from constructive, warrior responses, they achieved a 28% reduction in arrests and 45% reduction in violent crime arrests. Finding effective leverage points requires immersion. The crime lab identified 5,000 people, 0.2% of Chicago's population, representing 17% of homicide victims. With each gunshot injury costing society $1.5 million, intensive interventions at $22,000 per person become economically viable. Healthcare increasingly recognizes these social determinants of health. Hackensack Meridian School of Medicine now places them at its curriculum's core, matching students with families to help achieve health goals. Early warning systems dramatically improve prevention. LinkedIn halved recruiting product churn by tracking usage patterns and deploying specialists when clients showed warning signs. Japan's 3200 seismograph network issues earthquake warnings in 3 seconds, enough time to shut down production and seek shelter. But early warnings can harm. South Korea's thyroid cancer screening detected harmless turtle cancers that would never threaten patients, yet led to unnecessary surgeries. The impressive 99.7% survival rate reflected over-treatment, not medical success. After Sandy Hook, survivors founded Sandy Hook Promise to train students in recognizing warning signs. Pennsylvania's anonymous reporting system received 615 tips in its first week, leading to 46 suicide interventions. Measuring prevention proves challenging because upstream work lacks self-evident victories. Katie Cho, Boston's Public Works chief engineer, discovered 45% of repairs were performed on sidewalks already in good condition, while low-income areas with worse sidewalks were neglected. When measures become the mission, people game the system. English hospitals kept patients in ambulances to avoid violating wait time rules. The solution? Paired measures, balancing quantity metrics with quality checks. The cobra effect lurks everywhere, from colonial India's cobra bounty that increased cobra populations to open office plans that reduced face-to-face interactions. Upstream work demands humility. We can't control systems, but we can dance with them. Prevention is better than cure, yet we consistently undervalue upstream efforts. Life expectancy jumped from 47.3 years in 1900 to 76.8 in 2000, primarily by preventing childhood deaths. Infectious diseases dropped from 33% to under 3% of deaths through improved hygiene, clean water, and vaccines. Yet public health receives just 2.5% of healthcare spending. The problem? Preventive efforts succeed when nothing happens. Our fee-for-service model favors reaction. We'll pay $40,000 annually for insulin, but balk at $1,000 to prevent diabetes. The Nurse Family Partnership exemplifies this challenge. Pairing nurses with first-time, low-income mothers costs $10,000 per woman, but delivers $6.50 in benefits per dollar invested. Reduced preterm births, fewer injuries, less abuse, decreased criminal behavior. Yet, it faces the wrong pocket problem. The entity paying for prevention doesn't receive the financial benefits. Innovative payment models like accountable care organizations incentivize prevention. Dr. Jonathan Lilly's practice transformed, seeing fewer patients but spending more time with each, offering evening and weekend hours, monitoring health proactively. The result? Healthier patients, fewer hospitalizations, shared savings. When we align incentives with prevention, remarkable things happen. Tackling societal problems requires three principles. Be impatient for action, but patient for outcomes. Recognize that macro starts with micro, and favor scoreboards over pills. Sally Herndon's anti-smoking work in North Carolina exemplifies this. Starting in 1990, her team spent a decade achieving smoke-free policies in just 10% of school districts. Persistence eventually led to statewide bans across schools, hospitals, and restaurants by 2009. Upstream victories come an inch at a time, and then a yard, and then a mile. Solving problems at scale begins with understanding individual cases. Successful upstream interventions use by-name lists to track individual progress. You can't help thousands until you understand how to help one person. Getting proximate to problems is essential, like crime lab researchers reading 200 homicide reports to truly understand violence. Reject the flawed pill model where interventions are formulated, tested, then distributed unchanged. Instead, embrace the scoreboard model, where teams own problems and receive continuous feedback to adapt and improve. When John Koskinen became Y2K czar in 1998, he faced a classic no-win situation. Success means nothing happens. When January 1, 2000 arrived with only minor glitches, critics claimed Y2K had been exaggerated. Yet many IT leaders maintain it was a catastrophe narrowly avoided. We need enlightened chicken littles who raise awareness about existential risks without exploiting fear. Upstream thinking isn't just for organizations. It's for anyone confronting recurring problems. The best time to plant a tree was 20 years ago. The second best time is now. Stop rescuing drowning children and walk upstream.